You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the time pilot?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the American Red Cross.
So grab your first aid.
And let's get civical. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I'm Lizzie Stewart.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
And it is hot, hot, hot.
It is so hot.
I'm hot.
I'm hot. We're back to that part of the part of the year where we sweat throughout the entire episode because we cannot turn on the air conditioners because it creates noise. And so
it's so noisy. So yeah, I try to like cool off my the room before and then you have to turn it off. Yeah, it's a brutal, I mean, it's actually, what's sad is that it's not even like brutal heat yet.
No.
It's like in the mid 80s. Although I think it got, I think it maybe got into 90 yesterday, but yeah, it is. Yeah. We're sweating again.
We're sweating again. It's that point too where the other day I took a shower and I was like, okay, I got to dry my hair real quick. And I was like, absolutely not. It is 87 degrees outside. The minute you walk
out, sun.
It will be dry.
It will be dry.
And ain't nobody looking at your volume.
Mm-mm, honey, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Because everybody else is sweating their asses off, too.
Yeah, it's that time when you go into the park and you smell BO and sunscreen.
Yeah.
A really dynamic combination of senses.
Touché. Touché.
Yes.
And just, you know, a little bit of urine sprinkled throughout.
Yeah, because everybody's slightly peeing themselves. Look, the summer and the heat and the summertime makes people wild.
Wild.
You get the, like, especially right at the season change because everybody's just been so desperate for this moment and we're in it right now where it's finally turning from spring to summer.
Yeah.
And everybody loses their mind. Everybody starts acting out. Everybody starts lashing out. It's like you walk down the street and I'm like, have we all forgotten how to collectively act? As a society.
It's true. Oh, my God.
You'll see the strangest things. If you want to see the strangest things in New York, come here at the end of May, beginning of June, and watch.
You will see the wildest shit.
The wildest things. I saw a gentleman riding his bicycle, balancing a New York City sidewalk trash can on his head with no hands.
What?
On his bicycle. Mm-hmm.
That is so heavy.
It was very, and it was a full trash can. It was very impressive. I was.
Holy shit.
And he was doing it for like 10 minutes, just like kind of like going back and forth in the middle of the street, I should say. What? So cars are also having to like go around.
Oh my God. And then God forbid he drop it and drop it onto somebody's car.
I know.
Oh my God.
I mean, there was definitely risk. There was definitely risk. But yeah, people get wild.
Y'all, the city crazy. Come here and you'll see some shit. I feel like this is kind of what it must have been like in like the 70s, 80s when shit was popping off.
Sure. You know? Everybody's like, let's just take off our clothes. Let's just take off our clothes and love each other.
Let's just take off our clothes. Everybody, we're doing the drugs. I mean, like, you know, not judging people, but, you know, it's wish people well.
Wish everybody Godspeed.
God bless and Godspeed. But New York City is feeling a little bonkers right now, and I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah, we love it. We love it. And so, unrelated to everything we've talked about entirely, is an episode that I'm actually really excited about.
Yeah.
I know we've talked peripherally about the American Red Cross before, but this is everything to do with the American Red Cross, where she came from, what she is, where she's going, because it was established in May of 18. That's exactly right. That's what it says in the history books. And so what better, you know, time to do an episode on it than the anniversary of it being founded. So that's what we're going to do today. So before we jump in, do you want to go over today's sources?
Sure. There's two sources. I bet you can guess what they are.
I would, but I'm looking straight at the notes that have them on there.
That's so true.
So
it's not fair for you to guess because you have the answer. The Red Cross and history.com. Who else could we go to?
For whom the bell tolls could
for
we go
whom
to?
Whom the bell tolls. Who for else episode. Could give us Correct. Such good details?
Correct. So let's start off with not only her origins, but her international origins. Because it is global. It is not just like a U.S. thing. So the Red Cross is an international humanitarian network founded in 1863 in Switzerland with chapters worldwide that provide assistance to victims of disasters, armed conflict, and health crises. Hello, Switzerland.
Hello, Switzerland.
Of course, they're the ones that like, let's give aid.
Let's give aid. Let's not take a stand.
How about that?
We'll give all of the aid. Like kind of American centric my thinking is sometimes, or although maybe this is not my fault, but I was like, I knew that there were international arms. I didn't realize that basically we took the idea because it was a good idea and should be expanded, but I always think of it as like the American Red Cross and then other people like glommed onto us. It's the other way around.
Right. We are but a simple franchise.
We are a simple franchise.
If you really think about it.
Oh my God. We are the Wendy's to your McDonald's.
Absolutely. The Red Cross's roots date to 1859 when businessman Henry Dunant witnessed the bloody aftermath of the Battle of Solferino. Do we think? Solferino?
Yeah, Solferino.
In Italy, in which there was little medical support for injured soldiers. I like how there was a time when we just killed people or we shot them and we left them. Like, as a collective global society, it was like, nobody thought, like, should we have medics? Because it was just like, oh, if you're probably going to die. Like, that's like how little faith we had.
We have no way to really help you.
Yeah.
You seem to be bleeding profusely. We don't really know what to do about that.
And we could cut it off.
So sorry.
We cut it off.
We cut off the arm.
Tough.
But we don't really have the medical supplies to do that. Yeah, it took us a while to catch on.
Yeah.
Also, I guess we didn't really have the medicine.
We didn't. But I think we could have tried.
We could have tried something aside from leaving people on the battlefield.
That's what I'm saying. Like, any effort. Just a little effort. That's all.
A little bit.
Do not went on to advocate for the establishment of national relief organizations made up of trained volunteers who could offer assistance to war-wounded soldiers, regardless of which side of the fighting they were on. The fighting at the Battle of Solferino left some 40,000 troops dead, wounded, or missing, and both the armies, as well as the residents of the region, were ill-equipped to deal with the situation. I mean, sure, that's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of bodies. It's a lot of bodies in all various, like, stages of...
Yeah.
Injured to death.
Yeah. And not, I'm going to guess, a lot of medical physicians or even people to be like, would you like some water?
Sure. No, it's like the county doctor.
Right.
Who's like bleeding people. And you go here and you're like, well, you're already bleeding.
Right.
I'm out of options.
I'm out of options. That was my one.
I was going to bleed you, but now I see you're there already. Right. Shoot. Right.
Shoot. Beat me to the punch.
Rats. By 1862, Dunant published a book called A Memory of Solferino. And then the following year, he was a part of a Swiss-based committee that put together a plan for the National Relief Association. So we're gearing up to the formation of the Red Cross, which, as I said at the top, is formed in Switzerland in 1863.
Yeah.
So shout out to the Battle of Solferino.
For giving us the start of the Red Cross.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
So while Dunant is over in Switzerland witnessing the Battle of Solferino, having opinions about it, wanting to help, organizing people so that countries can get on board with helping people not to die sometimes of wounds from battle. Novel idea. Clara Barton is over in the U.S. and she's doing something kind of similar in the Civil War. So after the Civil War broke out in 1861, Clara Barton, who was a former teacher, then working in the U.S. Patent Office in Washington, D.C., voluntarily began delivering food and supplies to Union soldiers on the front lines.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
She's like, you know what? I'm done with these patents.
Yeah.
We gotta get focused here. Like, of course, the U.S. could only get this together because of a woman being like, wait, you guys don't have food?
You don't have food? I think I see a better way. More food.
Let me go get my bag. I've got you.
At the end of the war, Barton, who had earned the nickname Angel of the Battlefield, received permission from President Abraham Lincoln to operate the missing soldiers' office to help locate missing troops for their families and friends. So she was like so good at her job on the front lines, taking supplies to the battlefields for the Union soldiers. But she's also like got this office job experience. Or she's working in the patent office and she knows what it is to like track details.
She's a multi-hyphenate. It's honestly, what I love about this is that like she's the angel of the battlefield because she was bringing just like food and basic supplies. Like that's how bad these male soldiers were at like organizing themselves for war. And it was like how little we thought through what the human body would actually need.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, here's water.
Yeah. And they're God bless.
Oh, God bless. You actually saved my life, which I'm sure for like half of the people she dealt with was truly what they like, food and water.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Over the course of several years, Barton and her small staff received more than 63,000 letters asking for help and were able to track down some 22,000 men. People are writing to them asking, can you please help me find my father, brother, uncle, grandfather, you know, like, I don't know, like all these people. And they found that's like A third. They found a third of them at a time when, like, these records were very, I'm sure, few and far between and incomplete where they existed at all. Mm-hmm. And they're all handwritten. And it's not like information was delivered quickly.
No.
Amazing. With the extensive records that she had compiled during the war, Clara Barton succeeded in identifying thousands of the Union dead at the Andersonville prisoner of war camp. Then she was in Europe in 1870. So this is after the Civil War has ended and after Dunant has seen the Battle of Solferino and is like having his own thoughts about like what could we be doing to help the soldiers? And she's basically been doing the same thing. Mm. So she goes to Europe in 1870 when the Franco-Prussian War breaks out, and she went behind the German lines to work for the International Red Cross, which now has like Dunant has formed and has a footing and is operational. So she's working for the Red Cross.
It's funny the way this sentence is structured. It makes it seem like she was going to Europe for something, for holiday. Yep. And then all of a sudden the Franco-Prussian War broke out. And I imagine that to be so funny because it's just this poor woman who has spent the past, like, God, what, 8-9 years dealing with the Civil War and then the aftermath of the Civil War, finally goes on holiday, and then there's just immediately another war. And she's like, God damn it!
I just wanted to see.
Oh my God! I just wanted a cocktail.
I just wanted a cocktail and a smoke. You feel me?
My God, I feel you, Clara.
I feel you, honey. We feel you. In 1873, Clara Barton returned to the United States, and 4 years later, she organized an American branch of the International Red Cross. So she's going, she's learning, she's bringing stuff back. She's the original exchange student.
She is. She's the original franchisee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was like, wait, I'm already doing something similar. Let me, like, get your resources and get organized and copy your structure. And boom, bada, bing, we have the American Red Cross.
Right. Because clearly what Dunant was doing was working. And why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah. I mean, my God. Especially, it's like, she's already been through so much. You know? Like, we don't need to deal with the headaches of, like, oh, how do we structure this? There's already a model that exists.
Yep.
And one that is good.
Yeah. One that was good and functional and did good work.
Yeah. So now we are in America with the Red Cross. Clara Barton and a circle of her acquaintances founded the American Red Cross in Washington, D.C. on May 21st, 1881. Bam, bam, bam. Oh, that was literally 2 days ago. We love to see it.
We love to see it.
After she returned home from Europe, she campaigned for an American Red Cross and for the ratification of the Geneva Convention protecting the war injured, which the United States ratified in 1882. So not only is she, like, bringing the American Red Cross here, she's also like, okay, this Geneva Convention, super important. Being a little diplomat, which we love to see. So let's do this because we've got to protect those who are truly injured during war. Which, again, something that we just, as a global society, never thought of until the late 1800s.
My God.
Barton led the Red Cross for 23 years, during which time they conducted the first domestic and overseas disaster relief efforts, aided the United States military during the Spanish-American War, and campaigned successfully for the inclusion of peacetime relief work as part of the Global Red Cross Network, the so-called, quote, American Amendment, end quote, that initially met with some resistance in Europe. So she's like, I have all these big ideas. We should do this. We should do that. We should have relief during peacetime. We should have ba-ba-da-ba-ba. And the Europeans are like, oh, hold on.
They're like, hold on. Wait, we were with you helping the dying men on the battlefields.
Yeah. Now we do stuff in peacetime?
No. We don't want to prevent war by helping people during peacetime, giving them work to do, and providing for people in need. No.
Correct. The Red Cross received their first congressional charter in 1900 and second in 1905, the year after Barton resigned from the organization. The most recent version of the charter, which was adopted in May of 2007, restates the traditional purpose of the organization, which includes giving relief to and serving as a medium of communication between members of the American Armed Forces and their families, and providing national and international disaster relief and mitigation. The American Red Cross has a lot of run-on sentences, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Not an easy read, but I get what they're saying. Not an easy read.
It's a very pretty PDF. But not easy.
It is. Oh, well, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But the purpose being that the Red Cross is where you go to if you are in need of something as a soldier mm-hmm. or a family of a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
They can play diplomatic roles should there need to be, you know. Pretty much yep. anytime like disaster strikes in any way, shape, or form, the American Red Cross is like, I'll be right there.
I'll be right there. In fact, we're already right there. Turn around. Ooh, we're here.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Prior to the First World War, the Red Cross introduced its first aid, water safety, and public health nursing programs. Yes, water safety. Let's not die from dysentery.
Oh my god. Stop killing. Oh my god. So many people died.
So many people died because the water was not clean.
And people are still dying because the water isn't clean. How funny is that?
Or people don't think that the Clean Water Act is a necessary thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's literally. It makes my head hurt.
Sorry?
We have to have clean water or it will kill us.
It will kill us. We'll all be drunk because we'll all be drinking beer.
Any of these scenarios are not great.
No. With the outbreak of World War I, the organization experienced phenomenal growth. The number of local chapters jumped from 107 in 1914 to 3,864 in 1918, just 4 years later. And membership grew from 17,000 to over 20 million adult and 11 million junior Red Cross members. Like, hello.
A world war will do that.
A world war will do that.
I mean, you had to. Like,
right.
This was like so.
People are like, you're willing to help? Great. I'm in.
Yeah. It's like, what? If you weren't serving in the war, working in a factory, or like a nurse. What were you doing during World War One? There are so few roles to be doing during that time.
The public contributed $400 million in funds and materials to support Red Cross programs, including those for American and Allied forces and civilian refugees. The Red Cross staffed hospitals and ambulance companies and recruited 20,000 registered nurses to serve in the military. Additional Red Cross nurses came forward to combat the worldwide influenza epidemic of 1918. Hello.
Hello.
Spanish flu.
Hello, epidemic.
Hello, epidemic. We know you.
I raise you a pandemic.
After the First World War, the Red Cross focused on service to veterans and enhanced their programs in safety training, accident prevention, home care for the sick, and nutrition education.
Hell yeah.
I love this. I love this that in times of not war, they're not like, we're not working. Everything is fine. There's nothing for us to do. They're like
let's talk about your diet.
People are still in need of many things.
Yes.
They just don't need to have their arms sewn up right now. But maybe they would like to have an apple.
Correct. Heard of kale? Superfood.
Superfood. They also provided relief for victims of such major disasters as the Mississippi River floods in 1927. We should do an episode on that.
Hell yeah. Hell
love
yeah.
A river flood. I mean, I don't love
I
mean, a river
I
flood.
I come from the great Mississippi River, so.
Mm-hmm. And also the severe drought and depression of the 1930s. Yes. The Second World War called upon the Red Cross to provide extensive services once again to the U.S. military, its allies, and civilian war victims. They enrolled more than 104,000 nurses for military service, prepared 27 million packages for American and Allied prisoners of war, and shipped over 300,000 tons of supplies overseas. At the military's request, the Red Cross also initiated a national blood program that collected 13.3 million pints of blood for use by the armed forces. I love that the military was like, yes, water, food, blankets, happy things. We need blood.
Send us blood.
Ask the Americans for their blood.
Please, we got to get the blood over here. Mm-hmm. I just love that we're at the point where we can like give blood.
Yeah, you know.
Where it's finally like, maybe we don't have to cut off all the limb all of the time. I mean, we're still cutting off limbs, but like we have other options. Mm-hmm. We now have like some sterilization going on.
Oh.
There's like some type of medication, but it's still mostly whiskey. You know, it's nice to see progress.
It's nice
Look,
to see progress.
We've come from having zero medic, just like the single country doctor on the battlefield being like, oh my God. And now we're giving blood transfusions? Huge.
That's great.
Dangerous, but huge.
But huge. I love these people who like donated their blood. And could you imagine somebody in what year is this? Like
the 1940s, I assume.
1940s. Somebody in the 1940s like coming to you also as somebody in the 1940s and saying, we need your blood.
Yes, it's like, I beg your pardon.
I beg your pardon. How would you like to take my blood?
I know, but I bet you there's some great propaganda surrounding like, do your part, give your blood. Our boys back home need it now. You know, like, and it's a cartoon of a blood drop.
Oh, it's very peppy. And it probably also has pictures of like, you know, just battlefields and things that say like, our boys left their blood on the battlefield. You can leave some at our American Red Cross for their use, you know?
Grab the kids and come on down.
Come on down. You're the next contestant.
Mm-hmm.
After World War II, the Red Cross introduced its first nationwide civilian blood program that now supplies more than 40% of the blood and blood products in this country, U.S. During the 1990s, the American Red Cross engineered a massive modernization of blood service operations in the United States to improve the safety of our blood products, and they continued to provide services to members of the armed forces and their families, including the Korean War, Vietnam War, and the Gulf Wars. The Red Cross also expanded services into such fields as civil defense, CPR and AED training, HIV and AIDS education, and the provision of emotional care and support in the wake of disasters. Yes!
They really adapt with the times, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, and I'm sure I'm, you know, since the coronavirus pandemic has happened, that there's now, like, new things that they have that surround, disease epidemics and pandemics and how we respond and how they respond to those types of crises, since we truly haven't had anything like this happen since the Spanish flu.
No.
Which wasn't as bad as this. How fun. How fun is that?
Lizzie, we're so lucky to live in the era we live.
Ha 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 ha.
Multiple recessions, terrorist attacks.
Check.
Major shootings.
Check.
Epidemics.
Check. I love to see it.
At least we don't live with our parents.
The gang's all here. Give us time.
It's true.
Give us time.
It's true. Oh my God.
So let's close it out by talking about the modern day Red Cross. Since 2006, the Red Cross and FEMA have worked together helping government agencies and community organizations plan, coordinate, and provide food, shelter, and family reunification services for people affected by disasters. Today, the supporters, volunteers, and employees of the American Red Cross provide compassionate care in five critical areas. Number one, people affected by disasters in America. Number two, support for members of the military and for their families. Number three, blood collection, processing, and distribution. Number four, health and safety, education, and training. And number five, international relief and development. So something happens overseas, the American Red Cross, like with the Ukraine crisis, can go and provide support. Not just here, but to our friends abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They do good work.
They do good work. Look, I support the American Red Cross. I think if you can donate to them or donate blood, please do.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good. Especially
I always pass out when I donate blood.
You always pass out?
I try to do it as often as I can. Donating blood in the city freaks me out because it's often in like a weird van.
It's always in a van.
On the side of the road. It's always in a van. And that just scares me as like somebody who drives and takes cars in the city that like, God forbid there's a needle in my arm and somebody hits the bus.
Sure, 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 sure.
Like that creeps me out. So I tend to just donate blood when I go to Ohio. So, you know, I try, but I do, I pass out.
Wow. Do you, like, have to eat a cookie or something afterwards to, like, get you back?
Yeah, they always make me, so they lean me back. Well, first of all, they'll watch me, and then after a minute, they'll, like, probably see my face turn a little bit white.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, do you need to lay down? I'll be like, yes, I need to lay down.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. And then depending on how bad I look, they'll either be like, bring me snacks.
Oh, yeah.
Or they'll be like, you know, go sit down for 15, 20 minutes, have apple juice and Nutter Butters.
Yeah.
And it's not even so much that like, it's, I mean, I do it to myself because I lay there and I think about like, there's a needle in my arm. And if I bend it, it's going to stab me through the rest of my arm. And I'm going to bleed out profusely.
I mean, yes, I would call this a self-inflicted fainting session.
Oh, it totally is. I totally freak myself out. And they're always like, don't look at it. I'm like, I can't not look at it.
Yeah. See, so I don't pass out. I do get woozy, but a lot of the issue for me as well is my veins are very difficult to find. Especially like they always, you know, and like the usual, like this place, like at the, you know, base of your forearm and your bicep, which is where you normally, that's like the first place you go to get blood drawn. And it's just like every now and then I get a true ally, this like a veteran nurse who's been doing this for 40 years who like gets it in one. But most of the time, it is, like, 4 to 5 tries. And we'll switch arms sometimes. So it's, like, that part of it is Ooh. What is more traumatic to, because once we get going, I can like just close my eyes and like, I don't like it. And it does make me a little bit woozy, but like I can at least, like it's not going to make me faint by that point. But like, it's just the searching for the veins where I'm oh my God.
Good for you. I don't know. I mean, I have very excellent veins. They're both very obvious.
Okay, brag.
I know. My left arm is better, but my mom's best friends is a phlebotomist, and she one time looked at my arms and she was like, "Oh yeah, you got good veins." But one is like right there at the surface, and it's like you can see the holes, like the from where they've put where I've been poked, because it's like the vein is at the surface, and so you can see. I mean, not like, you know, you'd have to like stare at it, but like I can see them.
No. Mm-hmm. No, I got veins like the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh.
You know that it's there, but you can't find it. Look, we're really selling this idea of giving blood, but please go donate blood.
I try to donate blood. I try to donate as often as I can because I have the least common blood type.
Okay, I am the universal receiver.
Are you a universal donor?
Like, I can receive most types of blood. You're the universal donor, uh-uh. Which means your blood is good for anybody.
No, it's the other way around.
What do you have?
I'm AB. That's the universal receiver.
I'm AB.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Oh. I'm the universal receiver. Oh, we have the same blood type. Wait, but I thought O was the best type.
The O is the best universal one because donor. They're the universal donors.
Okay, so you're saying that you're the best one because you can receive anything. I thought what you were saying was I'm the best one because I can give anything. So what I love is that we just found out that we have the same blood type. Are you positive or negative? Is this sensitive information? Are people going to like steal this information and kill us?
And be like, we know their blood types. Now we can kidnap them. Hold on. Let me see if I have my... Because this part I can never remember. Hold on. Let me see if I have my Red Cross.
Oh.
Oh, I'm AB positive. So we're the second rarest. So you and I are AB positive. 3.9% of the U.S. population have our blood type. The rarest is AB negative, which looks to be less than 2% of the population. We can only donate to other ABs, but we can receive from everybody else. And there's something different about the way they process our blood.
Mm.
Yeah.
We're so rare. Shout out to all my ABs out there. Shout out to my Os. Shout out to my A's. Shout out to my B's.
We're so rare, and yet we found each other.
Am I missing any?
That's it. That's it.
It's good stuff, y'all. That is the end of our American Red Cross episode. And as always, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.